I'm Erin.
And I'm McKenna.
And together we're the Daily Profcast.
We're two long-distance besties
who share a love of Harry Potter.
We hope you enjoyed the episode.
Welcome, everybody, to this week's episode of the Daily Profcast.
This week we're going to be talking all about the Enneagram and Harry Potter.
McKenna, what is the Enneagram for any listeners who are not familiar with it?
The Enneagram is a personality typing system, much like your Myers-Briggs kind of typing system, except for the Enneagram focuses more on nurture rather than nature. It's an ancient typing system, and it composes of 9 different types that sit together on a wheel, and it kind of forms a pentagram as they're all connected to each other. The Enneagram suggests that your type emerges as a response to your early childhood experiences rather than how you might be born or the personality you might be born with. So that's where that whole nature versus nurture argument comes in. But it also looks at what the core motivation is for each type and thus for each person. What's really interesting to me about the Enneagram, why I like it so much, is, as we're going to talk about, there's some people or characters that share the same Enneagram type that might be completely different and on completely different spectrums. I really love that about the Enneagram.
Yeah.
It's something that's really risen in popularity in the last probably 5 years. There's tons of Instagram Enneagram accounts and lots of learning resources. You can even connect with a coach and go through a whole typing session, and they help you kind of learn how to harness your Enneagram for your betterment, whether it's personally or professionally.
Yeah.
Some great books on the Enneagram are The Road Back to You by Ian Crone and Suzanne Stabile. Suzanne Stabile is probably the best voice on the Enneagram in modern day. There's also The Sacred Enneagram by Christopher Huertz and The Wisdom of the Enneagram by Don Riso. Those are just some books that helped me learn about the Enneagram. I know my number, I'm a 1, and Erin is a 2. And there's a lot of times, even in our friendship, and now in this business relationship, where if one of us does something, I can kind of be like, oh, okay, that's like a little bit of her 2 shining through.
Yeah.
I can sort of see why she thinks that way, or why you're making that decision, or what's motivating you.
Yeah.
I love that about the Enneagram.
Rather than jumping to conclusions when somebody does or says something, you can be like, well, what was their real motivation for saying or doing this? Not that it's always a negative thing, but it's very interesting how it sort of helps you better understand your partner and your close friends. I want to ask you a question about this. I did read something just from the Enneagram Institute where it says that most authors believe we are like born with a basic type, and you were saying nature versus nurture. Do you disagree with that?
I would agree. I think a lot of people believe that we're born with a basic type, but that your childhood experiences and your developmental milestone experiences can affect which type you really end up in.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And anybody who's listening who hasn't taken the Enneagram test, maybe this would be a good point to pause the episode, go online and find an Enneagram test. There's a million of them. We'll link one in the show notes and kind of take an Enneagram test. And when you take those tests, it usually will populate you out percentages for where you hit in each type. And with that, you can see where you land. But something that a lot of people who study and coach on the Enneagram say, it really depends on where you feel you land.
Yeah.
You can maybe have 1 and 3 both quite high, but if you gravitate towards 3 more, that is where you land. You have a right to decide. The other thing about the Enneagram is you're really not supposed to comment or type people sort of like they're supposed to do that and decide for themselves.
It's like not your business to diagnose other people, you know?
Exactly. For today,
we are totally doing that.
Since we're dealing with fictional characters, and we thought it would just be an interesting deep dive into the world of Harry Potter to look at the different types, what the type is, and what characters might fit into that type.
We're not the first people to do this. There are other Harry Potter nerds / thinkers who have done this before, but we sort of tried to, for now, stay away from that literature so that we could draw our own conclusions. I will say what I like about, I mean, I've done Enneagram and both Enneagram and Myers-Briggs. And what I like about the Enneagram, you know, it's very specifically said that everybody has elements of all 9 personality types as a part of their personality. When we personality type people, we sort of are putting them in a box. It's like sorting people into houses. Like you're putting that person in a box, but they're really, you know, the first thing they say is like, you know, this is the type that maybe you're closest to, but everybody has aspects of all nine types. I like that there's a little bit more fluidity in the Enneagram. I also like that it deals with numbers because numbers are so neutral. A number doesn't come with preconceived notions.
The Enneagram is definitely more nuanced, which is a reason why I also really enjoy it.
Yeah, very cool. Should we dive in?
We should dive in.
Do you want to get started because this is your type, number one?
Yes. So type one is commonly known as a reformer. And the core fear is being wrong or being perceived as lazy. And there's just a strong desire for fairness, order, justice. Ones are often advocates for others. They push the status quo. They want to make the world better for those around them. They're also very intense learners. They seek knowledge and wisdom. And they're often very seeking of approval and love of those around them. Some weaknesses of the one is that they tend to be perfectionists to the extreme, which can be quite annoying for people around them. They have a hard time accepting realities for what they are, and they're very overly critical of both themselves and other people. That can kind of lead to obsessive behavior or a certain sense of self-righteousness.
Yeah.
I'm a one, but I would also say in my Harry Potter universe, my sisters and my oneness are Hermione Granger and Minerva McGonagall.
McKenna and I did this independently. We said, let's each come up with characters and discuss, but I feel like we're going to have a lot of agreement. Hermione was the first person who came to mind for that. And then McGonagall was a secondary person I thought of.
They are both one wing twos. So I think that they verge on the reformer to the helper kind of side. They push for justice, but they're very caring of those around them. I mean, you can see that in examples and just like how Hermione sticks up for people like Neville. She kind of fights for the underdog. Like she is a nurturer, a helper, but she also is somebody who's an intense learner and loves to fight for social justice.
Yeah. And has very high expectations for herself, as you can see in like the way she conducts herself with her schoolwork and her academic stuff.
And I just, one of the most one things about Hermione that comes to mind is in Half-Blood Prince, when Harry has the Half-Blood Prince's potions book with all the answers. And Hermione is just so upset and dumbfounded that Harry is getting a better mark than her in potions when he wasn't even supposed to have qualified to take that advanced potions class. And that's just very one. Just mad that he's cheating and getting away with it and doing better than her. Like those are just very one.
Yeah. Traits. Yeah. That's the justice side of the one is all coming through. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she creates spew in the books.
I think McGonagall is a good picture of an adult one, fully formed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Full fledged. Yeah. And she's a lot like Hermione, actually, when you, I think, objectively look at them, they're very similar. I think McGonagall is high achieving. You know, she's at a high rank in her job. She cares a lot about her students getting it right. She cares a lot about her house doing well.
Yeah, totally.
How about type number two?
All right, I'll share about twos because I am a two. The nomenclature for type two is the helper. Twos are often generous, demonstrative, but are also, they can be people-pleasing to a fault and possessive. So some other traits of twos are, and I think the one that sort of I feel the most is twos are very empathetic. So twos are good at putting themselves in other people's shoes to sort of feel their emotions with them or understand why people are feeling certain emotions. They're often warm-hearted, self-sacrificing, which can be a pro and sometimes a con. They're really sentimental. I'm like a crybaby. They have this need to be needed. Maybe I'm saying all these deprecating things.
No, I think you're hitting the full spectrum.
The basic fear for twos is being unworthy or unloved or unwanted. Exactly. The basic desire is to feel loved. I would say the aspects of somebody who's a healthy two are they're very humble and altruistic, but an unhealthy two really flips the total flip side of the coin. Twos can be, when they're unhealthy or under stress, can be really manipulative and self-serving, which is completely the opposite. They like being seen as the martyr. The first character that came to mind when I was thinking about this in terms of the Harry Potter universe was Hagrid. He really goes out of his way to not only be nice and loving to all the students, but to really make Harry feel loved, because he knows that he came from this unhappy, abusive home. I would say he is very altruistic and pretty humble. I also said Molly Weasley, just because she's such a nurturer, not only of her own children, but also of, you know, her children's friends. Those are my picks. Who did you say?
So this is the type that I had the most picks for. I have 5 picks, 2 of which you might want to fight me on, but I'm going to give it to you.
We'll
I also said Molly and Hagrid. I also said Dobby.
I fully agree with that.
Okay. I said Lily Potter as a 2-wing 3.
Yes. Yeah, I love that. I didn't even think about, like, James or Lily. Wow. Yeah, I fully agree with that.
And my last one, I really think you might want to reach through the screen, because Erin and I can see each other's faces right now. I think she might want to reach through the screen and punch me. But I said as an extreme unhealthy version of a 2, the most unhealthy on the spectrum you could get, I said Voldemort.
Ooh.
When they're in their most unhealthy, they thrive on emotional torture.
Yeah.
And I think Voldemort thrives on emotional torture. And I think he's a wing one, because I think he believes he's fighting for his own justice. Somebody could be one type, but they could have 2 opposing political ideals. Yeah. It's not to say like one is right or wrong. It's just to say that's what they believe is right. So I think he's a justice seeker in his own way with his pure blood agenda. But he is super emotionally manipulative, like extreme emotional torture. He is so offended by criticism, incredibly overbearing of his followers. Mm-hmm. And he desperately seeks approval of others, which I think he didn't get from his parents.
Yeah.
He didn't get at the orphanage. He didn't get enough of it from Dumbledore, which he took very, I think, personally offensively. And I think that he seeks it out from his Death Eaters.
That's interesting. I had actually typed Voldemort differently. You're bringing up some good points, though. I don't want to punch you. I don't want to reach through the screen.
Okay.
I actually had him typed differently, and we can sort of talk about this because I have him very close to it, too. I don't know that I'd agree that what he seeks is approval. I don't know that I agree with that. I think he's the only person who needs to approve of what he's doing. And he gets followers because he's charismatic, but I don't know that he seeks approval from other followers. When somebody opposes him, he doesn't try and get them to see his side. He murders them.
I think of the scene where it's after the Battle of Hogwarts and they think Harry's dead. And he is in front of Hogwarts and he's like, anybody who wishes to join me, come forward. And Neville's like, oh, I have something to say. And you see like Voldemort be like, okay, he's going to say something in support of me. And then Neville speaks out against him. And it's this like, Ralph Fiennes just portrays it so beautifully in the movie. But it's this like, I feel like you see his like soul like twist and turn, somebody speaking out against him. It's
doesn't
like
he laugh though?
I think
he's like laughing when Neville's like trying to stick her.
It's the initial look on his face of just like pure anger, and he laughs it off. But I don't think he likes being questioned. I don't think he...
No, I agree.
And I do think he needs to be universally wanted by everybody, but he'll do that by total dictatorship.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. So maybe this is a good segue then, because I had him typed as a super duper unhealthy 3. Some characteristics of unhealthy 3s are they're super vindictive. They attempt to ruin others' happiness and they do fear failure. So 3s are the achiever. I talked about 2s. Do you want to talk about 3s, McKenna?
Yeah, sure. You said 3s are the achiever. Their core fear is being worthless or disrespected by others. Mm. They want to feel extremely valued. They seek out accomplishment and admiration. They set big goals for themselves, and they'll do whatever it takes to succeed to feel that others can value them. Mm-hmm. 3s tend to have a strong focus on personal development and success. They're extremely charismatic and confident, and they're usually able to connect with the others and motivate and encourage them to their cause. Weaknesses of threes is that they focus too much on personal image. They have difficulty accepting failure from themselves or those around them. They lose touch with their own feelings and they're way too competitive. Yeah. I think of threes as people who are 35 years old and they go back to their parents' house and they still have all of their childhood trophies and ribbons from everything they ever did right. I think of threes as people who just covet the award.
Yeah, my boyfriend's a three. And like, when I first read it, I was like, because one of their core motivations is getting people to recognize that they are high achieving, like people pleasing, but not for the benefit of the other person. Twos people please for the benefit of the other person in as a roundabout way of themselves getting praised. Threes people please for the benefit of themselves. They like will do things so that people recognize them as being high achieving. This manifests in my boyfriend because he's super hardworking. He just throws everything in him into his work and he excels and does a great job because he wants to be good at his job. I love that about him. Threes are also like, they can be super ambitious and then super self-conscious when they think people are perceiving them as being not, as being like worthless, you know, and not achieving. And to me, this is like, this is so Voldemort. Sorry. The core fear is being worthless and their core desire is approval or to feel valuable. You were kind of saying that about him. It's really close to the fear and the desire of the two, because fear and desire for the two is being unworthy and being loved. I don't know that Voldemort's motivation is really love. I think it's approval and a following, not
for
like,
me,
go ahead.
Why I push him more into two is the manipulation and the emotional torture aspect, which are very yeah. two and not very three. I totally see where you're coming, because he definitely wants to be valued by others. He does not do well with failure. There is something that is charismatic about him.
Yeah. And like they said, he was like a charming kid growing up. He drew people to him. So that's why I put him there. I would say he's probably a wing, in my opinion, he's probably a three wing two, because the unhealthy characteristics of threes are being really vindictive and trying to ruin other people's happiness. I found a lot of unhealthy threes in the Harry Potter universe. Do you mind if I share my other picks?
I have a feeling they're going to be the same.
Yours? Then do you want to say yours?
I said Draco and Percy.
Yes. Percy. Okay. I'll let you explain that. I actually didn't think about Percy.
Percy is all about, to me, and especially after rereading Sorcerer's Stone, Percy's just all about other people, especially his siblings, recognizing
he's
how
superior.
Much better
that makes sense.
He is. That prefect badge is everything.
That's Percy. A good point. That's a good point.
I also said Draco.
Draco was my first pick, actually, for this. I think he's probably a leaning towards pretty unhealthy three.
Which I think is why Harry can lump him in with the Death Eaters and Voldemort so quickly. Draco has a core longing to feel like, number one, like his parents value him, that everybody at the school values him, that he's the very best at everything. I do think he's probably fairly smart and maybe yeah. driven to do well, but he really wants admiration of others.
Especially from his father.
Yes.
Yeah, I totally agree. I also had Gilderoy Lockhart in this category.
Yes.
Lockhart will do pretty much anything to get praise or approval.
Yep.
Including stealing other people's accomplishments. I thought of Cedric Diggory.
Yeah, I think Cedric could be a great healthy three. I also thought of Fleur as a great healthy three.
Oh, yeah.
So that's type three.
Yep.
Type four is the creative.
Oh, is that what it's called?
Yeah, that's what I've also heard it called, like the tortured romantic can be a type four.
Oh, I have mine. I wrote down the individualist. I mean, thing.
Yeah, I think that also goes. Basically, their core fear, meaninglessness.
That they don't have an identity.
Right. And they yeah. want to build a distinct identity for themselves and express it to the world. I think they crave being authentic. They struggle with doubt and misunderstanding. They connect deeply with their own emotions. They're sensitive to others' feelings, like extreme empaths. They just have a general awareness of where they lack. They're imaginative. They're deep thinkers. But I think some of their weaknesses are that they can withdraw from others, fixate on what they do not have. They can be often self-absorbed. React strongly and emotionally to hardship.
Yeah. I had also down here emotionally paralyzed. like yeah. cut off all feeling.
I like that terminology. It's very four. I had Luna down.
Yeah, as Luna's four. Like an archetype four wing five, right? The bohemian.
Yes.
Yeah.
Definitely the bohemian, but I actually think she errs more on the healthy side of a four.
Totally.
Because I don't think she has overly strong emotional reactions to things. I think she's fairly even keeled on a lot of fronts, although sometimes we do see her have a little bit more strong emotions.
Okay, you're gonna disagree with me on this, maybe. When I was doing my research for this episode, I was reading this and all the unhealthy sort of bad aspects of a four, the person who came to mind for me was Snape, actually.
Okay, so Snape is a really commonly typed four.
Okay, I have him sort of between a four and a five.
I typed Snape like six times and went yeah. back and did a lot of reading because nothing means more to me in the world than Severus Snape.
I did the same thing with Lupin. We care very much for our favorite characters. And maybe that's just me viewing Snape on a surface level as being temperamental and alienated and a loner. He came to mind when I was looking into fours.
I actually think Snape is somebody who like very much wants to fit in rather than be an individualist. So I have him typed as something completely different.
Okay. Yeah. When I did think of Snape, as far as like creativity goes, Snape invented several spells. He's very skilled with potions. I don't like think of him as being creative in sort of like an artsy way as much as he is like maybe in an academic way. Academically creative. That was my thinking for Snape, but he's your favorite character. You have way more psychological analysis on him.
Type five is the thinker. Mm-hmm. The core fear is not knowing, you know, a lack of knowledge. They passionately pursue new skills and hobbies. They want to feel helpful and competent. They prioritize developing their own intellect over most things in their life. They can also be withdrawn from others to guard themselves.
Isolated. Yeah.
Which just makes them feel safe. They think through complex issues and they're highly observant of others. They're constantly learning. They're usually able to stay calm in a crisis and they're extremely focused. Some of their weaknesses are that they do not relate well to the emotions of others. They can come off as a bit condescending. They can be disconnected from their feelings and often isolated.
Who did you type for this?
So I typed two people. Typed Albus Dumbledore.
Yeah, same with
me. And I typed him as a five wing four.
Our wings are very different. I typed him as a five wing six, actually.
I think I could totally see how he could go to a six, absolutely, because the six is the loyalist, and I can see that very much for Dumbledore.
Yeah.
But I also think there's something very bohemian about Dumbledore. He's just not like others. He sort of marches to the beat of his own drums. Mm-hmm. He is extremely creative. And I actually, when I think of characters who I think are very like each other, I really think of Dumbledore and Luna as being very
interesting.
I just mm-hmm. think that they're very similar. Though I think that Dumbledore is definitely more of the thinker predominantly.
Yeah.
And the creative secondarily. My other type five that I picked was Lupin. And I picked him as a five wing six.
Okay. I didn't even think about Lupin for five, and I'm so glad you said that because now I finally feel like I know where he goes. I think you're right. I think I didn't even think about Lupin for a five, and I think you just said that and everything clicked. I absolutely think he's a five because unhealthily fives can also be really reclusive and isolating. I do think Lupin does that to himself because he's afraid of hurting those around him. I totally agree.
Such a thinker. Him as a professor makes 300% sense in my head.
Yeah, now that I'm looking at this, wow, everything just, I'm so glad you said that. You're so much smarter as far as Enneagrams go than I am, and I'm just thankful for it. I have Snape, ? I have him between four and five, but I'm curious to see what you have to say. And then I had Alistair Moody.
Okay, I have Moody as a different type, but I can see
how. Oh, okay. Oh, I'm excited. All right.
Okay, so type six is the loyalist. So yeah. Next to two, I have the most people typed as a six.
Okay, I have a couple for six as well. Are very engaging, very responsible, but they can also be really anxious and suspicious. They're very committed to the people around them and to like their causes, and they're trustworthy, but they can also be defensive and rebellious. Their basic fear is of being without support or guidance is what I took down. What do you have on that?
I have a six's basic fear is being chaos.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
The lack of a sense of equilibrium. They have a deep desire to feel secure. They want to feel like they can trust those around them. They value loyalty highly. They are the loyalist. The mentality of a six might be expect the worst, but hope for the best.
Okay.
They're responsible, practical. They honor commitments to others. They protect those around them fiercely. Mm-hmm. And what's, I think, very unique about a six is they're very able to consider both logic and emotion and have those go hand in hand when making decisions.
Yeah. Yes. I love that. They're very courageous and trusting, but in an unhealthy state, they're more volatile and have lots of feelings of inferiority.
Yeah. So to me, Severus Snape is my pinnacle six.
Okay.
And I have him as a six wing five because I think he goes between the loyalist and the thinker. I think that those are two types that fit him very well. I definitely think he's more of an unhealthy six, but some things I think that he values loyalty highly. Obviously, his relationship with Dumbledore is
that makes sense.
Very important to him. I think he overthinks his decisions. I think he's responsible and practical. I think he obviously honors his commitments, especially those that he made to Dumbledore. And the commitment that he made to himself to protect Harry for Lily, that commitment is like the pinnacle of his life. He protects people around him fiercely, but he also has difficulty controlling his feelings, especially his anxieties and his depressions. He's pessimistic. I think he does have a high level of self-doubt that he's always had throughout his childhood, this feeling of inferiority.
Okay, interesting. So that actually adds to my main pick for a six, because I think it would make sense that, I don't know if I'm fully committed to Snape being a six yet, but you're right, there are a lot of aspects, and I think it makes sense that he would butt heads so much with my pick for a six if they were similar in this way, who was Harry. You can't see, but McKenna is making a face at me. Hear me out. I knew we were going to have a if about this. I knew it. As soon as I typed him, I was like, oh, McKenna's totally going to disagree. Even in having these conversations for this podcast, I think we view Harry very differently.
Yeah.
The reason I have Harry, I think, as a six wing five. Here's why. Okay. He's very committed and loyal to his friends. That is Harry's defining feature and why he is so different from Tom Riddle. He genuinely cares about his friends and he is very loyal to them and very committed, but he can also get really defensive and he is a rebel. He can be super rebellious, which is like his father coming out in him. In his healthy state, he's super courageous and trusting, but in his unhealthy state, he is volatile and like has feelings of inferiority. The biggest reason that I typed Harry as a six, actually two biggest reasons. So first of all, the desire to have the motivation is like having security, which is something Harry has literally never had in his life because he was with the Dursleys. That was like obviously an unsafe environment. And then he gets to Hogwarts and he's still not safe. My biggest reason that I typed Harry as a six, and hear me out, for sixes, when they're in a point, when they're in a period of growth, they go towards a type nine, which is the peacemaker. And type nines tend to be really like agreeable, but also like sort of complacent. When Hermione and Ron are fighting, Harry becomes very much like a fly on the wall. He does not get into it, but also under stress, and here's where you might agree with me, under stress, sixes can go towards type three, the achiever. Now, Harry, at his worst, and you can be kind of full of himself, like we discussed a couple episodes ago, like Harry, but I am the chosen one, you know, that is the characteristic of a three. And that's what I think the reason I'm so adamant about Voldemort being a three, not a two, is because I think under stress, Harry goes towards type three, which is very much what I view Voldemort as. So, and we see that come out in him because, you know, he's got a part of Voldemort inside of him. So when he's stressed, he becomes very, not only vindictive, but also like self-righteous.
Harry was the last person I typed, and I thought that he was the hardest. And part of the reason I thought he was the hardest is because I don't know that his little baby brain is fully developed yet.
That's
and
fair.
I see a lot of different types in Harry, and maybe he was written to be that way, to sort of like have a yeah. little bit of everything. I mean, I have Neville Longbottom as a six.
No, what? Okay, I mean, I guess I can see it.
Chaos. Like, Neville does not want chaos. Neville wants, like, normalcy. extremely loyal. Neville is the best Gryffindor of them all. And expect the worst, hope for the best is, like, I think literally would be Neville's life motto.
Okay, that's fair. I also have
Ron.
Yeah, Ron is definitely a loyalist. He's super, again, super committed to Harry and Hermione, but can be very defensive and rebellious and have feelings of inferiority. That's his biggest, like.
I have Ron wing 7, though.
I do too. Okay.
And I have Mad-Eye Moody as a 6, wing 5.
Okay, I could see that. I also have down, not necessarily as an unhealthy 6, I think she's a very healthy 6, but very evil, is Bellatrix Lestrange.
Yeah,
She's Voldemort's general.
I would 100% agree with that.
Yeah.
Okay, type 7. Mm. This one's a little lighter, a little bit more fun.
Yeah.
Type 7's the adventurer. Their core fear is deprivation.
Yes.
They love being stimulated, engaged, satisfied. They're goal-oriented. They might go to great lengths to get new experiences. They hate feeling like they might miss out on excitement or experiences. They rationalize away negative feelings. They love to avoid negative emotions. They're highly energetic and optimistic, quick thinkers, easily handles changes in plans, and sees many solutions to a problem. Mm-hmm. What do you have as some of their weaknesses?
Oh, they're impulsive and undisciplined and can be scattered.
Yes. Yeah. A little bit self-centered, maybe difficult committing to plans.
Yeah, but also fun-loving and very spontaneous.
Yes.
I think we probably have the same people for this.
I have Fred and George Weasley.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Fred and George Weasley are archetype 7s. I think they're probably 7 wing 6. Would you agree with that? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think they're goofy, they're fun, they love new experiences, they love getting into trouble. They're kind of troublemakers. But I also think that the rationalize away negative feelings was one of the things that really stood out to me for Fred and George, because they use humor and jokes to cover up, I think.
Like, to cope.
Yeah. Maybe Lee Jordan I could put in as a 7.
Yeah. No, maybe not. I was going to say maybe I could see Seamus Finnegan having aspects of a 7, but I would actually, I think now that I'm looking at the 8, I might put him down towards an 8 instead. Okay. Well, McKenna and I have feelings about type 8.
I have a lot of friends in my life who are type 8s.
Everyone needs a good 8 in their life to call them out on their BS.
The 8 is the protector or the challenger. I also like to call 8s affectionately the bulldozer. 8s do not like being controlled or told what to do. They protect themselves. They like to remain in control of their own lives. They seek to defend themselves and others from injustice. They deny that they have any vulnerability, and they hate appearing weak to others. They can often be intimidating, disregard other people's opinions. They have a difficulty following rules, and they take charge when it definitely isn't their place to do so.
Yeah. I put very assertive and protective, but also a need for control and like a huge lack of vulnerability, mm-hmm. or like the ability to like be vulnerable to others.
They do not like to be weak or appear as weak to others.
Yeah. Yeah. I agreed.
I have 3 main 8s.
I really don't think you're going to agree with my pick for 8. My pick was Ginny Weasley.
Oh, I have Ginny Weasley.
Oh, great. Okay, cool. Yeah. Like the fear, what stuck out to me was fear of being controlled by others. So much of the rest of Ginny's life is shaped by her experiences in Chamber of Secrets when she is being super manipulated by Tom Riddle and like how awful that experience was. So I think she like grows out of that by becoming really sort of assertive and protective of those she loves. And she calls people out on their BS.
So I totally agree with that. I have Sirius.
Okay, I have thoughts.
I have him as a 8 wing 7. And I think I didn't originally type him, but as I'm going through these types and talking it out, I think I would also have James as an 8.
Okay, so that's really interesting. So like, do you think 8 wing 7 as well?
Yeah.
I think, so Sirius and James, I do agree. I sort of put them in between 7 and 8 because they're both very, like, in school, they were the Fred and George. They were the goof-offs. They were the troublemakers in school. But as soon as they leave school and they join the Order of the Phoenix and everything gets really serious, they do become very assertive and protective. I had them probably as 7 wing 8s, actually, rather than 8 wing 7, just because I don't think they fear being deprived of. That's hard. They're, like, in between 7 and 8 for me.
You said that they were like the Fred and George of their year, which I agree that they were definitely the troublemakers of the year, but there was also this bulldozer mean quality in just the way they treated Severus.
Oh, yeah.
And if you treat one person like that, that's not the only person you're teasing and making fun of.
Like James used to, it says somewhere that he used to like hex first years just for that.
Yeah. And I think that they're definitely, they don't like being controlled. I think that they are pretty classic eights.
And the confrontational aspect of eights, that does make sense.
I think that one of the reasons, obviously Azkaban is horrible for everybody, but I don't think Sirius, I think that goes against being confined and locked up, goes against everything that he is. Like, he doesn't want to be controlled.
That's
he doesn't
really want to
be stuck in one place. So I see him as a classic eight, and I see James also sort of fitting that box. So definitely an eight wing seven, because I think there is also a playful quality about them, but totally. I think it comes in their friendship group, not in the general sense of who they are.
No, you're right. And the bullying of Severus totally makes sense that they would actually fit more in an eight now that you're saying that, because Fred and George are playful, but they're not bullies.
Right.
They're not torturing anybody. They're there to make everybody around them happy. And so that fact, you're right. You have changed my mind on that. Who did you have anybody else?
No,
those are your three. Those are your three. Yeah. Okay, I'm waiting for where you're going to put Harry, and now I know. So we're on to type nine, which is the peacemaker. Nines are very receptive and agreeable, but they can also be complacent with circumstances and stuff. So maybe not stand up for things, even though they maybe think they should. They can be very stable and optimistic. Their basic fear is loss or separation. And their basic desire is inner stability and peace of mind. Oh, I'm starting to see what you're thinking now. Do you have anything to say to add to that stuff?
No, I think you got it all. I think they have a tendency to minimize problems. They avoid difficult or upsetting situations. They don't like facing their own personal conflict or demons. Mm-hmm. So I have Harry as a nine wing eight.
Okay.
And I really did think about this forever and ever, because this was a hard one to sort of pick through and place. Mm-hmm. But I try and think of who Harry would be if he didn't have to be the chosen one. And I think that
that's a
Harry,
really interesting way to look at it.
I think Harry is at his core peaceful. I don't think he likes conflict. I don't think he wants to be part of it. I think that's part of the reason why he struggles so much, is like he doesn't want to be the chosen one, but yet he's sort of like thrown into this position. I think he's incredibly supportive of his friends. I think of like when he was trying to prop up Ron before his first Quidditch game. And so he pretended he put the Felix Felicis in his drink so that Ron would do better. Mm-hmm. I think he's always trying to look for ways to lift up his friends and to sort of like shine for them. But I do see a lot of his dad in him, which is why I also did the wing eight, because I think when Harry is not at his best and he's maybe more in an unhealthy place, he can be a little bit confrontational. Which is not so nine, definitely a little bit more eight. He definitely, you know, would talk back to the Dursleys, talked back to Professor Umbridge, but he only does those things when he's seeking justice at a situation that is unfair.
Unjust.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think these all do make sense, because three, six, and nine are all connected on the Enneagram, on the graph. So it does make sense. So it makes sense. And actually, now that I'm looking at it, the fear and desire of nines and sixes are actually very close. So basic desire for sixes is to have security. And the basic desire for a peacemaker is like inner peace and stability. So that's very close.
Sixes are fears of chaos.
Yeah. So fears of chaos, and then nines are fear of loss or separation. So that those are sort of close motivations. Which is, so that makes sense.
And Harry's felt the largest loss in his life. And I think like he genuinely doesn't want to suffer any more loss and separation in his life from his new family and friends that he's concocted together.
That makes sense. I did originally have Harry as a nine. I guess the reason I took him off was because I wouldn't call him somebody who's complacent.
No, but I think complacency can be an unhealthy nine behavior, or a nine behavior that's not totally...
And it's not like everybody in a type presents all of the characteristics of the type. I actually had Neville down as a nine.
Interesting.
Yeah. I think Neville's the happy medium Neville is the one who goes to hang out with Harry when him and Ron are fighting in Goblet of Fire. And I guess that's why I put both Harry and Ron as sixes, because I feel like they are similar with different desires. And that's why they can butt heads at times.
Me too. One of the biggest things out of nine for Harry is the ignore pain and numb their internal conflicts.
I think
he's always trying to minimize like what he's going through.
McKenna married Harry Potter and I'm dating like a Cedric type three.
Yes, I also can see that as well.
Yeah. Good stuff. I also like I wrote Lupin ? As Peacemaker, but I don't agree with that anymore. When you said Lupin is a five, I was like, oh my gosh. Yes.
Lupin is a five was the one that came to me and I was totally sold on it.
Yeah.
So those are our picks for Harry Potter characters and the Enneagram. We would love to hear your guys' thoughts and opinions on our.
Yeah. We'll have, you know, places for you to put comments as well as stuff on the Instagram account where you feel free to comment your own thoughts on posts.
Definitely.
We'd love to hear
them. Let us know what you think we got right, what you think we got wrong. If you're really defensive about your type and you have somebody in the series who exemplifies that for you, you know, it'd be interesting because we didn't include any Fantastic Beasts people in here.
Oh.
So maybe we'll have to reopen this conversation when we take a closer look at Fantastic Beasts.
Oh, that's a great idea. Thanks for joining us and we'll see you next week.
Hey, thanks for listening to our latest episode. As always, please subscribe on whatever podcast platform you're listening on. And if you're not a listener on Apple Podcasts, it would still help us out a lot if you head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a 5-star review. If you have any questions, comments, concerns about anything you heard in this episode today, please drop us a line at our Anchor profile. You can leave us a nifty little voice message there, or you can head to our Instagram at The Daily Profcast to DM us or leave us an email.